Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 91 of the Uncovered podcast. I'm Behram Kazi, who you can find at Def Mango on Twitter. And with me, as always, is Jared Kimber, who you can find absolutely everywhere. There are a few talking points off the field that we have for this particular, you know, episode. And what better place to start than talking about the retirements of Virat Kohli, Rohit Sharma, and now Ravi Jadeja as well. Virat Kohli had scored 75 runs in this entire World Cup campaign leading up to the final. And in the final, he scored 76. Rohit Sharma had a splendid tournament and won the T20 World Cup as captain. Both of those guys said goodbye at the perfect time, signed off in style, aced their retirements to perfection, as did Ravi Jadeja, who in a weird way was the weakest link in this Indian team, if you really look at it from that angle. But no better way to go, Jared.
He had one of the... He had one of the gentlest rides of any player, didn't he? Just because Akshar was the bowler that they usually used before him. And Akshar quite often batted before him as well. So, look, but Jadeja, when it comes down to it, was really important because of the whole number eight thing, which we just covered in 17 hours on the, on the last podcast. Look, we've seen lots of retirements, haven't we? And lots of players playing the last series. I think we thought that was going to be the case. You know, the 50-over World Cup, because this T20 World Cup was so close afterwards, we thought a few players would hold on a little bit longer. Now we're starting to see those sorts of players, you know, Williamsons and obviously Warner and all those sorts of guys put their hands up. And India winning makes it even easier, And you know, there's a whole generation of players that are moving on. I think sometimes you see that a lot at World Cups anyway. It might feel like this is a bigger generation than we've seen in previous times. But, you know, they've all done their job. The Indian guys and even the guys who didn't win the titles, they, you know, they've done their jobs in the next generation. That's what happens. And you can't play forever. And it'd be really interesting to see what Virat Kohli does. I kind of hope he just plays Test cricket and IPL from here on in. If he's going to keep playing IPL, I don't really want him. I mean, not that he's not a sensational one-day player, but I kind of don't think he needs to go on and continue to play one-day cricket either, unless he thinks the Champions Trophy is great. It'd be great if he just gave himself a break. Gave himself some time, which I don't think there's any cricketer I've ever covered that needs more time than Virat Kohli. And just takes a break, goes, what do I like to do? Do you know what? I do want to try and win a title with RCB. I'm going to give myself two or three more years at that. I'm going to really commit to that. And I'm a bit annoyed I didn't make as many runs over the last couple of years in Test match cricket. I'm going to go and be the beast that I used to be before again. And also, I love watching him bat. He's, you know, from the minute the Fab Four started, he was my pick, and I haven't really changed. Certainly my favorite of them all to watch by a long distance. And so I just want to see him make runs in Test cricket into the future, you know, and the RCB thing. Well, he's got India over the line here. Let's see what he can do for
That'll
RCB.
That'd be really exciting to watch.
There's no RCB fans who've listened to that, who actually believe that is possible.
I mean, they've had illustrious careers, both Rohit and Virat and Jadeja. I mean, sure, he was a bit of a passenger at times in this T20 World Cup, but he's had a phenomenal career. And both of those guys, Rohit and Virat, are batting behemoths. And they've, what, scored over 4,000 runs each in the format for India. And they've, what, struck at... one is, I think Rohit is at 140. Rohit is at, Kohli is at 137. So they've both done a very, very good job. The averages are up too, and they are legends. They've had an Imran Khan-esque farewell in this particular format, I feel. And I mean, that is literally the best way to sign off, because let's be real, they might not have gotten picked for the next T20 World Cup. All three of these guys.
Even if that was the case, and I suppose it's possible, I just don't see why they would want to hang around waiting for it now. Like, unless they were like, you know, I'm going to play this. I just personally, and I don't know either any of the three of these guys. So I'm not talking, I'm talking about this from like a relationship I have with them. I just can't see why they would have all sat, any of them would have sat there and go, you know what, I'll come back in 2 years' time. It just seems too far away and too pointless. Yeah. So I'm happy that they're moving on at a good time for them.
And I mean, we've definitely enjoyed them over the years. So thank you for all the entertainment. Rohit, Virat and Ravi Jadeja. And we hope to see you in Test cricket at the very least for a long, long time, because all three of those guys are actually quite critical to India's Test team if you really look at it. Another guy who did bow out in style is someone who's never won a World Cup with India. And Rahul Dravid now finally has one as coach in his final assignment as India's head coach. What a way to go out for him as well. And I feel like he also... Did you see the video where he kind of lifted the trophy and kind of let that dog out, which we've never seen in his entire playing career? He clearly has that passion as well. And what I loved about him, Jared, was A, he's a calm and collected guy generally and someone who's very technical. But also prior to this final, he said that I don't like the narrative where you need to win this cup for somebody. It's out there to win. There's a cup. Someone needs to win it. And we should be the team that goes on and takes it for us, you know? Win it for yourself. And if there's something out there, it's there for the taking. So I like that mindset. And I am personally a big Rahul Dravid fan. Love the way he played his cricket. And he is one of the best test batters of all time. Wonder where he makes the list in your book. But yeah, lovely way for him to...
He made it. I tell you what, just for those who don't know, I asked him to chat to me for the book. And obviously we used to work together. You know, we've been friends for quite a long time. And I sent it out there thinking, well, Rahul's not going to be able to do this. The World Cup's coming up. And he did. And he took it as seriously as anyone else I've interviewed. Probably more. Him and Jimmy Adams just got so into it, right? Like just the absolutely brilliant talking to both of them. And he did get into it. But he sent me, when he sent the email back, he goes, oh, I probably won't make it in the top 50. He's kind of that guy, right? Yeah. Like, and I'm just happy. I think he's the only... I might know a couple of other people around the periphery, I suppose, but I don't have a huge friendship group within that Indian squad, like I do from some of the other teams, obviously. But I was really happy. I think they showed him after the second last ball, so with one ball to go when India couldn't lose, and you saw how, and I was just like that made me feel happy to see someone. And you know, when you work in cricket this long, it's great that Australia win, but I don't really care if Australia lose, if that makes sense. I kind of really enjoy it when they win, but when they lose, I don't feel as much now because I'm a professional. Yeah. But when I have a friend playing or someone I know or someone whose journey I know really well or whatever, I really get invested. And I think, you know, for me, Rahul Dravid was one of the reasons I wanted India. I wanted them to win because of that generation thing and because of how good they've been, and to shut people up talking about them as being chokers. But I also wanted them to win from a Rahul Dravid perspective. And I think it cements him as an Indian legend, right?
It does.
He took the team that couldn't quite get over the line. He got them there. For most of us who watched him bat, we already knew he was a legend. But for that next generation who didn't get to see him bat and didn't understand what it was like to watch a man who literally put the highest price on his wicket of pretty much almost anyone in the game. You know, if you didn't see it, you don't get it. Right. And I understand that sort of stuff. Now he's got two generations working for him. And you know, well done to him.
Go well, you know, in the remainder of your life, Jammy. I'm not sure if you want to stay involved working in cricket or not. Maybe you want a break.
Well, is this the perfect time to invite him on if he wants the third chair on our show?
Yeah, that would be fucking amazing, you know. I would probably...
Because we know that at the 2 hour and 8 minute mark of our recording, Rahul Dravid is sitting there going, finally they asked!
I mean, he's such a classy guy. I don't think anyone can hate on him, man. He's just too lovable a character, and I'm really happy that he, you know, led India to a T20 World Cup title as coach, because... He's a damn good coach as well, it seems like it, because that dressing room, you know, to manage all of those egos and all of those star players, that takes, you know, a certain something as well. So credit to him. And moving forward, a bit of sad news, Jared. Frank Duckworth, co-inventor of the DLS method, has passed away at age 84. Of course, people were making the joke that South Africa made a final right after, but I don't think that's a correctly timed one. Someone who has given the sport a lot, I suppose. We're still using that method, and it was sad news, wasn't it?
Do you want the greatest Frank Duckworth story of all time?
Why else am I sitting here at the 2-hour 9-minute mark? That's why.
Duckworth and Lewis wrote a book about their lives. I think that both of them are covered in this book, if I remember correctly. And Frank Duckworth was doing his PhD in like metallurgy or something. I could have made that bit up, but it was something random he was doing his PhD in. And he was doing his PhD in Liverpool. And so he's in Liverpool doing his PhD, and he was staying with a woman who took lodgers. And if I think I'm getting all the facts of this right, but the woman who he was who he was lodging with was John Lennon's auntie.
Okay.
And so for 6 months, I think John Lennon and Frank Duckworth lived in the same house.
That is crazy,
right? And you Google this, make sure I haven't got any of these details wrong, but it's roughly correct anyway. And so for 6 months, he lived in a house with one of the most famous people in the world. And this is their biography. It's a proper book. It's not like it's like a pamphlet or anything. It's a proper book. And I remember reading it. And there's almost nothing on John Lennon other than the fact he says something along the lines of, oh, he was a bit moody in the morning. And, you know, I didn't really spend much time with him. And you're just like, Frank.
He was.
If nothing else.
He was a tenant of John Lennon's aunt. Yes, that's the story.
Auntie, there we go. I can't believe I got all those details right. But I just remember thinking, Frank, you've got to sell this book, son. You are famous for an algorithm. And you lived with John Lennon. Duckworth Lewis, great. There's a band named after your algorithm. It's really cool. We all talk about it. That's great. But just give me a chapter on John Lennon. Just give me a chapter. What sort of cricketer was John Lennon? What did John Lennon think of Richie Beno's rain rule? Whatever you've got, right, that you can give us there. Anyway, look, those guys, it's not a perfect system, but they gave, if you go back and have a look at the systems beforehand, they're absolutely terrible. It was mathematically based. It's got some issues. I think T20 cricket has moved beyond it, but they really gave us the opportunity to finish games on TV and build audiences that we would not have been able to do beforehand. He... as far as I'm concerned, absolute legend of cricket for what he managed to do. And, what a random life he lived and thoughts go out to his
absolutely.
Family.
Absolutely. Whoever was associated to Duckworth, Frank Duckworth, whether you be a part of his family or his friend, deepest condolences, someone who cricket will remember for a long, long time and will continue to remember. His legacy is etched in the DLS method, of course, which we continue to use. So our deepest condolences. Another bit of sad news, I suppose. I'm not sure how you would feel about this if you're a Sri Lankan fan. Maybe we need to ask Estelle. Chris Silverwood has stepped down as Sri Lankan head coach. And what I am wondering is whether this is, you know, as a direct result of Sri Lanka's, you know, poor T20 World Cup campaign, them getting, you know, knocked out in the group stages, or, you know, was he just done with that particular job? He gave Sri Lankan cricket a lot, you know, that team developed well under him. Mickey gave him a developing team. He helped develop it further. The fast bowling stocks improved under Chris Silverwood, who himself was a fast bowler. I feel like that's the legacy that he leaves.
Yeah, I think it's a bit of a shame, isn't it, all things considered. We don't really know anything at the moment about the situation. I would hope that they didn't just lose badly and that he's been given the arse, because I don't think he's that kind of coach anyway. I think he's a development coach, and this is a team that is young and incredible. And again, it feels like they got a good person in charge, put themselves in a good position, and they've stuffed it up. And I hope that's not the case. Maybe Chris just wanted to move back to the UK I don't know Chris particularly well. Although I think I faced his son, who was about 9 or 10 in a charity game once. And I know he was there at the time. And I remember meeting him. He always seemed like a good guy when I talked to him as a journalist, or, you know, just occasionally when I saw him around hotels and things. I just hope that it's just a lifestyle choice, and it's not a politics choice because of what's going on with Sri Lankan cricket, or it's not a, you guys were terrible in this World Cup, because they were terrible in this World Cup, and we all understand that. I think he was doing some really interesting things with Sri Lankan cricket, and I would have liked to have seen him do that
post Vaas, Kulasekara, Malinga, Kulasekara, Malinga, because Vaas had retired at that point, I feel. Sri Lankan cricket did not see that boom in, you know, the fast bowling department. And right now, they've got so many. They're young, they're raw, they have to be, you know, nurtured and groomed. But I feel like Chris Silverwood has a lot to do with that. And I hope that it isn't a scapegoat situation, because there ain't no goat like a scapegoat, right? And Sri Lankan cricket is a mess, as is Pakistan cricket and so many other boards. The Bangladesh cricket board isn't one that's...
There's coming off this World Cup, there's, you know, like England's not quite sure now where to go. I know that's less of the board, but again, New Zealand in a complete mess. There's a few teams coming out of this World Cup where you're just like, oh, shit. Like, what is the next step here? This next year and a half, if you're not basically what Australia, India, South Africa, and South Africa have their own issues, but you know, there's a few teams you just like, what direction is this about to go in? And what direction is the board about to go in some cases?
And on that grim note, let's take a short ad break. You're watching Uncovered with Jared and Behram, and we'll be back on your screen after this ad.
Cricket 8 brings you this show. They are a new player in the game trying to educate fans on what is really happening in cricket. Head over for their watch-alongs, podcasts and articles on what is happening on the field and why it matters. Cricket 8 is your place for cricket intelligence.
Hello and welcome back to Uncovered. You guys are with Jared and Behram. And Jared, England have announced their test squad for the first and second test matches versus the West Indies, the first of which at Lord's I will be covering. And I'll be there in England with Jared when we're doing the, when we're recording next week's Overthrows and Uncovered. So watch out for that, guys. Lots of omissions. Johnny Bairstow has been axed. Ben Foulkes has been axed. His Surrey teammate,
The wicket keeper.
Jamie Smith has been brought in, a 23-year-old Surrey player. So Foulkes will go back to playing for Surrey and Jamie Smith will be playing for England. Shoaib Bashir has been preferred as England's lone spinner ahead of Jack Leach and Tom Hartley. And in the pace bowling department, you've got Matthew Potts, who's played test cricket before. Jimmy Anderson was only available for the first test match. And then you've got Gus Atkinson and Dylan Pennington, who actually bowls quite a fast bowl, as the uncapped seamers for this series. Very, very interesting selection calls over there by England.
Yeah, they're certainly trying to rebuild on the fly now, aren't they? And this is probably a good summer for them to be able to do that. The Bairstow one was obvious. The Jamie Smith one was pretty clear. They just love him so much. And I'd heard so many things. Really happy that Matthew Potts is back, because I think he was
fantastic. Is also so good in India for the England Lions side, remember? He's taking wickets on wickets.
Yeah. Atkinson, they kind of have to work out how good Atkinson is, and this is a good time to do that. And as you said, Shoaib Bashir. Did he not get whacked everywhere?
He got whacked by...
Was it Dan Lawrence?
Lawrence, 38 runs. And after that, Lewis Skimber smashed Ollie Robinson for 43 runs. So Ollie can go back to his day job.
That's how we do, buddy. That's how
we do. Ollie did not get selected for the squad either. And I'm sure that the Wisden guys will take care of him, of course.
It'd be really interesting, because I thought that they would probably go Robinson at one end, Potts at the other end, and then Atkinson at first change. I mean, I know Jimmy's going to play, but I mean, going forward. And they just seem to have just gone, Robertson's gone. And he's still one of the best new ball bowlers in the world, but we know about all of his many issues as well, which are there. And, you know, my brother, Louis, might have been, you know, a part of that as well.
Is it Louis Kimber? I thought it was Lewis. I don't know.
Is it Lewis? I thought it was Louis. I don't know. That's actually quite funny. Someone told me that on Classic FM, a newsreader actually read it out saying that Jared Kimber...
I sent you a tweet in which they said that after Rocky Flintoff, now we have Jared Kimber's son smashing sixes.
So, yeah, I thought it was Louis, but maybe it is Lewis. I'm not sure. I've only ever seen his name written down until recently, because people would always say, are you related? And I was like, look, all Kimbers are related, but like, you know, he might be my 19th cousin. I think it's really interesting that England is going to do this. It's probably for the best, but they also might struggle at times in this series, right? It's not particularly a strong team, especially from a wicket-taking perspective. There's a lot of questions that need to be answered in that particular lineup at the moment. So fascinated to see how it goes. And, you know, maybe one of the more interesting things is they still have Chris Woakes. So instead of Ollie Robinson, they've gone Chris Woakes, which I do find
they would want the batting depth over there with Chris Woakes, I feel. But what I find surprising is no Mark Wood. Because surely you keep him in the squad, right? Maybe they want to give him a break for the first and second test, and then he can come in after they've tried a few of the new guys. Because Dylan Pennington, I saw some clips. He bowls rockets. Some of those deliveries are flying off the surface.
It's weird because there's experience and there's not experience, and do you know what? From a fan's perspective and from a media perspective, this is the perfect squad, because you just get bored of the same teams coming out over and over again, right? And you're seeing a team just go, we're going to rebuild, but we're going to rebuild like shit. Wait for this. This is going to whack you in the face.
But Jared, and look at their top five. Duckett, Crawley, Ollie Pope, Joe Root, Ben Stokes, and then you've got, Who else am I missing over here? Harry Brook. The top six is basically unchanged. And then you have Jamie Smith and then Chris Wokes and then some of the new pacers after Jimmy is gone. So even though that squad looks very radical, in the playing 11, maybe Shoaib Bashir gets a go for the entire series and there are a few other guys who will come in the bowling department. Otherwise, it's more or less quite safe.
Yes and no. I think the fact Dan Lawrence is in it is interesting.
Well, Dan Lawrence has been in terrific form.
Yeah, and also, does that put pressure on Ollie Pope again? And they still don't have a number three in this team, right? The Bashir thing is really interesting. So you're right. There's a few, but you are talking about in this, and I don't know how many players are in the squad. Is it 13 or 14?
I didn't count them.
if you look at the squad, there's seven or eight really interesting decisions. Yeah. You don't see that very often, right? That is a team going, okay, reset. Let's see how we go from
2.0. Here. Let's try some new things and let's not include Sam Cook for it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Sam Cook and Ollie Robertson not being there seems to think that if you look at this bowling attack, and this is a bowling attack that is preparing for Australia.
That's basically it. That's what they do. It's ashes to ashes, their preparation. And that's why they've gone for guys like Pennington and Gus Atkinson, because they want that pace, right? And they don't want to rely on Mark Wood.
Even potentially Bashir.
True.
Tall spinner to go up against the left-handers. So it'd be interesting anyway. But I like it because there's plenty to talk about. And this will make this series a lot more interesting, especially now that Kemar Roach is not playing.
Yeah, and Varun told us to mention that especially, but even though the West Indies are losing out on some accuracy, I feel like they've got both the Josephs, Shamar and Alzari. Jaden Seals is promising, and then who else am I missing in that bowling attack? I'm definitely missing someone.
Yeah, I'm Moti might play as well, mind me. But you look at Kemar Roach, and he's just, he's such a good bowler. And he's such a fantastic player all the way through. And England is where he should be, very close to his best. And I know he hasn't always dominated in England, but when he's bowled brilliant balls in England, it's almost been unplayable. And he's quite often done it in weaker bowling attacks. This, as you said, feels like a slightly stronger bowling attack. I would have been really interested to see how he would go. I just love Kemar Roach. He's been one of my favorites since the first day he bowled. So for me, it's always disappointing when he's not
experienced
playing
as well and has played a lot of county cricket. So that is really disappointing for the West Indies. But it's going to be a cracker of a series. I'll be there at Lord's, guys. So I'll be bringing you some live action and some pieces. And Jared and I have some fun content planned for you as well whilst I'll be in the UK. Let's take that super chat and call it a day. Path right winger, never misses, always hits. Mitchell Johnson, he says, said in a podcast, as a young man, I didn't have the strength to hold my body up, but by the end of his career, he was visibly more muscular. Is that why modern bowlers aren't as deadly?
So Dirk Nannis once said that, so he didn't play cricket when he was young professionally, and he starts playing when he's about 27, 28, and really doesn't become a professional until he's 29. And he has this theory that it's very hard to bowl fast consistently without an adult man's body. So we know that Pat Cummins and Nazim Shah and Waqar Yunus and all these different guys. Although Waqar Yunus is probably not a good example because he had whatever age he was when he made his debut, he was one of the most ridiculous physical specimens we've ever had in cricket. But there is an argument that you can bowl fast when you're young, as in mechanically, right? But that the strain that it puts on your body makes it very hard to do it repeatedly and to do it without injury. So you can kind of, it takes a freak to be able to do it consistently without your body falling apart or without your action falling apart. And what Mitch Johnson here is kind of following on what Dirk Nannis says. And so we in cricket try and pick bowlers when they're young and fast because that's when we want them, right? We want them in the side when they're young and fast because that's when they're going to have the biggest impact. Whereas actually what we are probably seeing now is that sort of, Mitchell Johnson is a good example of this. Mark Wood is another very good example of this, is you put these players in a really good dietary professional structure and actually their best and fast years might be between the age of 28 and 32, right? If you can get them there. The issue is, if you think about Mitchell Johnson, he quit cricket when he was young and Mark Wood was always injured, so he didn't bowl a lot. Most bowlers aren't like that. And so there is an issue there. And it's why Pakistan's a perfect example of this. Pakistan get these young bowlers in. they're not always biomechanically perfect. They're not looked after physically as much as they should be. And then they lose their pace and they get injured. And then they either come back as a completely different bowler. And the same thing happened to Dennis Lilly. This used to happen right across all cricket. But you see it in Pakistan again and again and again. And what Mitch Johnson is saying, and it's more of, you talk about him being more, visibly more muscular. If you listen, I'm pretty sure I'm right with this. No, I am, because I've talked to Mitch Johnson about this before when Mitch had his own podcast. And I was talking to him about this. He had a very different kind of body from the beginning of his career to the end of his career. And a lot of it was about core strength and building up his core strength. And that took him a long time. And he actually got much more buff towards the end of his career when he knew he was going to retire and he wanted a beach body. Yeah. It's a very different kind of physicality. And I remember seeing Srisanth, right? When Srisanth went off to be a Bollywood actor and you know, act in the Kerala industry and all those sorts of things, he got really, really buff. And he was saying to me, oh, I'm getting buff for bowling. And I was like, mate, you cannot bowl with that body. So it's not just about that. It's about the core strength that you build up and the way that your muscles develop as you get older. And the strength that you need to be able to bowl very, very fast. I think we probably have got it wrong in cricket throughout the first 150 years of picking young guys when they're young and fast. And actually now we might be getting to a period where we're starting to work it out a little bit more and bowlers can bowl further into their career. Someone like Liam Plunkett was probably a much better bowler when he was old and strong than he was when he was just young and fast, right? And I think it's the combination of all those different things I think is really important.
Yeah, absolutely. And that kind of wraps up this episode of Uncovered. Thank you to everyone who was in the comment section and to those who sent us super chats. And just a quick reminder to everybody, you can go to goodareas.co and bookmark that webpage. That can prove to be your one-stop shop for all the work that we do as part of our team, whether it be written content, podcasts, or videos. We'll be back with another episode of Uncovered next week. That is all for now. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Baron Kazi and Estelle Vasudevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recording. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, oh, you are going to need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up incredible clips from your podcasts and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.